Egypt's Valley of the Kings, the ancient burial place of the pharaoh Tutankhamun. The discovery of his tomb in 1922 made the archaeologist Howard Carter a global celebrity. But it was another member of Carter's team who played the crucial role in telling his story to the world. He doesn't appear in the excavation photographs because he was the man who took them. His camera made the world fall in love with the boy king, Tutankhamun, and helped fuel my own enduring fascination with this remote and mysterious culture. I wanted to find out more about this photographic pioneer, who created such wonderful pictures in the most testing conditions imaginable. To help me, I enlisted a photographer who uses similar techniques.
Okay, hold still. Five. Yes!
Together, we'll investigate the work of an unsung hero of British photography and travel back to the site of his greatest assignment. We'll discover how he pushed the limits of 1920s technology in the grit and heat of the desert and created a remarkable treasure store of images.
This is a beautifully laid out picture, well thought out. It's like an old master in a way.
We'll recreate his darkroom in the depths of an ancient tomb.
And to think, we're right, literally, exactly where Burton would have developed his own negatives.
And reveal the enduring legacy of his work.
They're one of the basic go-to sources for us. Anyone who's studying Tutankhamun uses those.
And we'll learn why his techniques are still used today to unpack the secrets of Egypt's ancient past. This is the story of the most famous photographer you've probably never heard of. His name was Harry Burton, the man who shot Tutankhamun.
A sepia photograph of Burton, the man who shot Tutankhamun, presented by Margaret Mountford. Sandy hills beneath sunny skies.
3,000 years ago, a stately procession of priests and mourners made their way through these desert hills, a few miles west of the ancient city of Thebes, or Luxor as it's called today. They came to bury a young man who died suddenly and mysteriously, 9 years into his reign as pharaoh. Tutankhamun's body, and the precious artifact buried with it, lay undiscovered for centuries.
A portrait of a man in a bow tie.
In the early years of the 20th century, British archaeologist Howard Carter was determined to find them.
In a room with a tiled floor.
This dig house in the Valley of the Kings was headquarters for his long quest, bankrolled by the wealthy aristocrat Lord Carnarvon. They employed a small army of local workmen who shifted thousands of tons of sand and stones. But after 8 years of searching, they'd failed to find anything of significance. And Carter's time was running out.
Lord Carnarvon was about to cut off Carter's funding. But everything changed when one of the workmen brushed away the sand to reveal a hidden staircase leading to an underground tomb. And the date, 4th of November, 1922.
2 weeks later, at the Winter Palace Hotel in Luxor, Carter and Carnarvon announced their news to the world. They'd solved one of archaeology's greatest mysteries. They'd uncovered the tomb of the pharaoh, Tutankhamun.
And that was just the start of the story.
A dazzling sun resting on top of a distant mountain ridge.
Carter knew that he needed a crack team to help him excavate the site and to tell the story of the treasures it contained. So he sent out a call for archaeology's brightest and best. Diggers, conservation experts, professors of hieroglyphics, and a photographer called Harry Burton.
A camera lens.
For the next 10 years, Burton had a front seat as the greatest story in the history of archaeology unfolded in the Egyptian desert.
A photograph of a team inside the tomb.
His camera recorded in exquisite detail the extraordinary artifacts from the tomb.
Men around a sarcophagus.
And captured each chapter in this dramatic story of revelation. He created images that gripped the world's imagination and played a crucial role in creating the legend of Tutankhamun. The search for this master of British photography begins a world away from the heat and dust of the desert.
Most of Carter's wonderful things are still in Egypt, but for anyone with a passion for ancient history, there's a store of other treasures from his excavation much closer to home.
This is the Griffith Institute in Oxford. Tucked away in the basement are Howard Carter's meticulous archives of his 10-year adventure in the Valley of the Kings. Like so many great adventures, it all began with a map.
This is Carter's original map of the Valley of the Kings.
So there's a sort of grid system that he drew.
That's right. He divided the Valley of the Kings into a series of grid squares, and he worked through them systematically in the search for Tutankhamun's tomb until there was just one grid square remaining, close to the entrance of the tomb of King Ramses VI.
This is where they found Tutankhamun's tomb.
This is where he found the first steps leading to a tomb. At this point, they didn't know that it was King Tutankhamun's tomb.
Well, he must have been terribly excited. Was he?
Yes, certainly. This is Carter's original diary for 1922. Mm-hmm. And if we turn to the page for Saturday, the 4th of November, we see he writes across the page, first steps of tomb found. This is quite unusual for Carter. Normally he stuck very tightly and neatly to the lines, but here he...
This was just exciting.
Yes, absolutely. This is about as excited as Carter gets.
One of those pivotal moment, isn't it? Passed into popular folklore. Everyone knows Carter found wonderful things.
Carter was no mere treasure hunter. He was a new breed of archaeologist who wanted to excavate and record his finds with scientific rigour. Within days of uncovering the stairway, he began taking photographs. But he wasn't happy with the results.
Carter was a trained artist, he was a great painter, also a skilled photographer, but I think he realised that he would need a real professional in order to take photographs inside the tomb in what were going to be very, very difficult conditions. It was very dark, packed with objects, and so he needed a real professional to do the work.
And I suppose he had to do other things too,
didn't
he?
He had an awful lot on his plate, of course, during the excavation of the tomb.
This was Carter's original team, including the man who stayed by his side through every twist and turn of the excavation.
Which one's Burton?
So this is Howard Carter in the centre, and just over his shoulder is the photographer Harry Burton.
Ancient Egypt has intrigued me for years, but I'd never heard Burton's story. He shunned the limelight, although his pictures made Carter a star. I want to find out more about this elusive man. How did he create the wonderful photographs that Egyptologists still study today? And like Carter, I've recruited a photographer to work with me.
Just fantastic.
Harry Corey Wright still shoots today with a large format camera, like the one Burton used to make pictures like these.
What a beautiful thing.
But there's one crucial difference between Harry's camera and Burton's. Harry shoots on film, whereas Burton used an earlier technology called glass plate. His original negatives are another treasure in the archive of the Griffith Institute, and they are full of clues to his photographic methods.
Look, Margaret, look at these.
So these are the glass plates themselves that would have been in the camera at the time.
Why did he use glass plates? Wasn't there film?
Well, I think there was film around, but I don't think it was in any way as stable.
The technology of film was just developing at the time, but I think that glass was that much more predictable, really.
Glass plate negatives had been used since the early days of photography. A thin glass sheet was coated with silver nitrate emulsion, which reacted to light when the shutter was released. The negatives were then developed to make prints. Burton's expertise with this process is extraordinary. How did he make these delicate masterpieces in hostile desert terrain?
It's incredibly fragile.
Imagine you're developing this, and it's dusty, and also I can't tell you when it's wet emulsion,
It just gathers dust, gathers everything. I mean, it's extraordinary how good nick these things are in.
Now, what I think so amazing about these is that this tells the whole story of the excavation.
Now, this is what photography at its best can do, which is show high drama, and then also it can be lyrical and sweet.
But, you know, his head coming through it and the gentleman at the back here,
and all these other incidental things. Yeah, I want to get down and have a look closely in here and see what cufflinks he was wearing.
And his ring.
And his ring, yeah, exactly.
And what do you feel, Cisco, when you're working with this material?
The first of all, that you have to be very careful. These are very important documents, very fragile, but it's nice to see people at work. We read about Carter, about the different members of the team, so you get to know them better.
And there's something very, very exciting, I think, about how what we're looking at is just, we're looking at the originals, so they have the chemicals that reacted to the light that was there. And it's an extraordinary thing about photography is that light can just kind of keep something charged and held for a, you know, for a long time, and in this case, you know, for nearly 100 years.
I've asked Harry to come with me to Egypt and take photographs there using Burton's methods and equipment. Together, we'll investigate how he created such flawless images using analogue technology that he must have pushed to its limits.
This is a beautifully laid out picture, well thought out, very much about the people and the human side of it. And this is, you know, it's like an old master in a way, the way he's kind of composed that. I mean, this one here, and this has a sort of journalistic quality to it, which is very different to those others.
By the time Carter came calling, Harry Burton had worked in Egypt for more than 10 years. It was a long way from his modest childhood in Stamford, Lincolnshire.
His father was a cabinet maker or a carpenter, so a pretty humble beginning. But Burton seems to have been clever, he seems to have been going to school, and at some point as a teenager, we don't know how, he came into contact with a man from a prominent local family, a man named Robert Henry Hobart Cust.
Cust's patronage opened new doors for Burton. He left Stamford to work as personal assistant to this wealthy art enthusiast who had a home in Italy.
He invites Burton, when Burton's about 17, to join him in Florence as a secretary, basically, a secretary and a companion. And it's there that Burton enters a whole new world. They wind up living in the center of Florence, right near the Ponte Vecchio, in a beautiful apartment, and through wonderful parties, and knew all these Brits who were flooding into Florence and soaking up the atmosphere of Renaissance Italy and a warmer climate. We don't know exactly how Burton picked up photography or how he learned it, but at this time, in the 1880s, 1890s, it would have been really useful for him as Cust's assistant to be able to take photographs when they were visiting museums, visiting private collections, visiting cathedrals for Cust's research. It clearly becomes a real passion for him, and he seems to start to get a reputation for it.
In Florence, Burton met an American called Theodore Davis, a multi-millionaire with a passion for Egypt.
He'd made a mint and possibly some dodgy deals in New York City. He had a huge house that he'd built in Newport, Rhode Island, and he had retired and liked to spend his winters in Egypt and in Italy. Davis could afford to do what the Egyptian government at that time couldn't. The Egyptian government was flat broke after bankruptcy in the 1870s. And so to have Davis's money was perfect, and Davis was given the plum concession of excavating in the Valley of the Kings.
Davis recruited Burton to his team. He worked as an archaeologist at first, but soon began to focus on photography instead. When Davis retired home to America in 1914, Burton stayed on to work for the New York Metropolitan Museum, who had their own team in the Valley of the Kings. By 1922, he was known as the best excavation photographer in Egypt. But he was about to begin the assignment that would earn him international recognition, because Howard Carter had just made the discovery of the century.
So this is the real entrance. And in fact, right here, Carter would have been coming down, and underneath, you can't see because there are these metal stairs, but that's the real step that he saw. 4th of November, 1922, this one step changed the course of Egyptological history.
For Carter and Carnarvon, this was a time of triumph and vindication. Day by day, step by step, they dug their way down to the Pharaoh's tomb.
So this, you have to imagine, when Carter came here, was actually filled with dust and limestone chipping and sand.
Why was it full of all that stuff?
Because when you rebury, you actually fill it all up so thieves don't get through. Except, of course, the thieves did, because there was a little passageway, tunnel, that the thieves had made through all of this limestone. And so, of course, when Carter was looking at this, he was probably, there was foreboding in his heart, thinking,
the thieves might have emptied it.
What'll happen when we get down? Will there be anything? Will there not be anything?
This was where Carter peered into the darkness and saw a chamber packed to overflowing with wonderful things.
So this is the antechamber.
Yep, here it is.
With now a false floor. Presumably it was lower down, wasn't it?
Yes.
And this, the mummy, but I mean...
Many things have changed here since the great pharaoh was laid to rest all those centuries ago. His remains have been taken from the sarcophagus and placed in a climate-controlled glass case. And all the extraordinary objects buried with him were removed long ago for safekeeping in museums. It's hard to imagine what this empty space looked like when Carter discovered it full of the pharaoh's treasures. But at least we have Burton's images to turn back time.
So this is one of Burton's photographs of this end of the room. Mm-hmm. And there's the chariot wheels.
Right, these ones over there. And these are very nice because you've got the little stools that Tutankhamun sat on.
He actually sat on, or were they for him to sit on in the afterlife?
No, I think they were actually things that he used. Oh. And what's nice is that even in the Burton picture, sometimes you get the sense of scale and you get small things and big things when he was a child, when he was grown up.
And that's the back wall.
Yes, which had more chariotry and a little bit of, you know, smaller boxes.
You can see nearly all of two couches, mm-hmm. can't you,
yeah,
along here?
Yeah, the hippo couches there, and then you've got the big curved tail from this one here.
What are these things?
These are the food boxes.
The picnic.
His picnic, so he could not be hungry in the afterlife. And then some of the boats and coffers up there.
And you can see the walls are still the same, can't you?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, just sort of this big blank room. Mm. But what gave it its sort of excitement was all of the stuff in it. It really was chock-a-block.
Right, and this is the other end of the room with those two guardian statues.
Yeah.
So over there, there's
one here, this one here, mm-hmm. and then that one, flush to that wall.
But not symmetrical with this one.
No, there's a little bit off-centre because the opening wasn't actually completely centred.
But they are guarding the opening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it wasn't as wide as this either, was it?
No, of course, this has been broken open because ultimately they had to extend it so they could take the shrines apart and bring them out.
So it's only because of this photograph that we could actually see the wall back in position.
Yes, sadly, with archaeology, you have to destroy if you're going to discover anything, but you need a meticulous record like Burton's photographs if you're going to be successful.
This was an unparalleled discovery, an almost completely intact royal burial. It took months to record the tightly packed treasures in the antechamber. First, Burton took establishing shots to record the position of objects like the extraordinary animal-shaped couches. Then he took close-ups of each carefully numbered artifact. This is one of the great treasures of the tomb, a throne made of timber overlaid with gold. On the backrest, an image of the pharaoh and his queen, bathed in the sun's rays.
A technical drawing of the throne.
When Burton was working, colour photography was still in its infancy. His meticulous black and white images were supplemented by Carter's detailed notes and drawings. They record the colours Burton's camera couldn't capture.
Handwritten notes along the top of a photograph.
It was only when the antechamber was fully recorded and emptied that Carter could address the mystery of what lay behind this sealed entrance. Did this wall hide the pharaoh's burial chamber?
A man in a shirt and jeans, carrying a rucksack and a tripod.
Photographer Harry Corey Wright has arrived in Egypt and he's ready to start work. He's taken some wonderful pictures with his large format camera over the years. But this will be his first attempt to shoot in desert conditions, using the same techniques Burton employed almost 100 years ago.
He climbs some steps, then regards some ancient relief carvings on an exterior wall.
Medinet Habu is the mortuary temple of the pharaoh Ramesses III, who ruled in Egypt around 150 years after Tutankhamun's death. It's a location Burton also photographed before he worked with Carter.
Harry Corey Wright.
Gosh, what a place. So here we are, just inside the defensive walls. And just look at the way it's just sort of crumbling away. You can see every brick there sort of made and now just tumbling down.
Harry walks past fallen columns, the distant, crumbling, muddy brown ruins surrounding him.
When Burton began work with Carter, he'd already taken thousands of pictures in conditions like these. It's a good place to begin my own experiments using Burton's methods and equipment.
A wooden case with a large square lens on one side and a black bellows within.
My Gandolfi camera is almost identical to Burton's 1920s original, apart from the addition of a modern lens and shutter. I've adapted it to use glass plate negatives, like Burton did.
So here is the heart of the thing, which is the glass negative that's in here. This is just an extraordinarily intolerant environment to kind of have something as delicate as this. How Burton did it, I can't understand it, because he had boxes of these things.
Burton worked in an age before light meters were commercially available. He knew from experience how to juggle the variables of aperture and shutter speed to get a good exposure in this intense light. It's confusing to me. It feels so much brighter than what I'm used to working with in our temperate climate at home.
It's about that. So spot reading on here, on the rock, there. I'm going to go 1 second at 45.
Harry pushes a switch at the top of the lens, then steps behind the camera to pull out a black sheet. He depresses a button on a short cord, then pushes the sheet back into the side and pulls the slide out.
I always find it amazing this moment, after that rather beautiful pause of 1 second, which sort of drank in all of that scene that we got out there. Now, all of that information is sitting in the sliver of emulsion that sits on the top of the glass slide. So we're going to tuck it away. And then, can't wait. But it's held in sort of this sort of tension until it's developed. Let's see what happens.
Glass plate photography is no job for the impatient. Every shot must be carefully considered and executed. Harry Burton went through the same rigmarole thousands of times because Carter wanted a complete photographic record of his excavation. Once the antechamber was emptied, he moved on to other areas of the tomb. This fearsome statue of Anubis, the Egyptian god of mummification, stood sentinel over the pharaoh's treasury. Inside, Carter discovered a gilded shrine containing Tutankhamun's embalmed organs, protected by four goddesses. It was, said Carter, the most beautiful monument I've ever seen. It made one gasp with wonder and astonishment.
Burton's photographs are a wonderful record for us of how the tomb was when they found it, and they're beautiful to look at. Mm. But are they still any use? Do you still use them?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're one of the basic go-to sources for us. Anyone who's studying Tutankhamun uses those. I'm working with a group of other people on the sticks and staves of Tutankhamun. The sticks and staves have two purposes. One, of course, is if you need it, but it is also very much a symbol of authority, and it's part of your royal regalia. Plus, certain sticks and staves have importance and significance in the transition to the afterlife. So the Madhu staff and the this staff, etc., and there are various spells associated with them. And it was extraordinary because with the Burton photographs, some of his close-ups are so meticulous, you can see even the materials that things were made out of.
Could you take photographs like that today?
It's really difficult because we've been trying, and even with our really high-tech digital cameras, we do get the colour, but the resolution is never as quite as crisp one feels as Harry Burton's glass plate negatives.
So, have you got any favourites?
I like this one with Carter.
Working.
Yeah.
And the lamp and the props and everything they had to put in, because of course they couldn't just work in the space, could they? They had to make sure everything stayed in position and then move it one at a time.
Yeah, and I mean, in a way, this is a great testament to Carter's work as an archaeologist and the hours he must have spent sort of sitting there in the hot sort of swelteringness of the tomb, meticulously recording every tiny piece of information. And really, between Burton's photographs and Carter's notes, it really does tell you how archaeology should be done.
In the 10 years it took to excavate the tomb, Burton created an archive of more than 1,400 images. And after each shot, the exposed negative had to be removed from the camera and swapped for a new glass plate, which is more complicated than you might imagine.
It's obviously a light tight tent. I've got the glass negative, and I've got to take it out of the dark slide and put it into a box and put a new one in. And I'm not very good at doing two things at once, so I've got to really concentrate. I've done this in a few strange places, but not quite with a view like that.
Harry's not the only photographer on site. Archaeologists from the University of Chicago have been studying this temple complex since the 1920s, when Carter and Burton worked close by. Like Burton, the Chicago House unit pioneered the use of cameras in archaeology. Jaakko Kobylecki and Sue Lesen keep that tradition alive today.
We'll measure that again.
Yeah.
Sue.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Gosh, now tell me, what are you doing?
Well, we're going to attempt to photograph this huge block of Nubians.
Yeah.
And the first thing we have to do is make sure we have some reference, which is these scales.
Right.
So,
but importantly to me, you are using a 10-8 plate camera.
That's right.
Now, why?
Why? Because it's the largest resolution that's possible.
But even so, I mean, you know, here we are in, you know, 2016, and we've got you know, all sorts of digital equipment available, but this is still
the best.
And it's not just because you love it.
No,
completely does the job better than anything
else. At some point, it'll come, but as of yet, no. Yeah.
So this does go right back, you know, you can put yourself in Burton's place very easily.
The Chicago House team is driven by the same ideal that motivated Burton and Carter.
And the level, yeah.
Okay.
Got it? Great.
This is perfectionism with a purpose.
There we go, back and forth.
Got it.
Now we're level.
The photographs they take today will be collated with hand-drawn plans and other data to help create a completely accurate record of an extraordinary and fragile historical site.
Harry heads indoors.
The vast majority of Burton's images record artifacts from the tomb, but he also photographed the archaeologists at work. In this image, Carter's colleagues examine one of six chariots discovered in the tomb. It was a symbol of Egyptian kingship, decorated with gold, coloured glass and stone. Harry hopes to create a similar picture today.
Harry's standing by a doorway in a carved stone wall.
What I'm after here is a picture that has some of the finesse and the elegance of what Burton was able to do. I'm looking at a photograph that perhaps gives a little bit of that structure of where he's orchestrated the picture a little bit. I want to try and find a picture that's got just some quiet process of everybody at work.
He sees a woman on a scaffold.
Hello.
He looks through a large doorway obstructed by the scaffold supports.
Aha. That's what we're after.
A man on a wooden ladder.
Photographing people with a camera like this brings challenges that you don't come up against with digital.
If we can get you into position, can I ask you to kind of lean? So I'm thinking sort of just here. You keep your shoulder against.
Because they're less sensitive to light, glass plates need a longer exposure. Very, very still. And a patient subject, like Badawi, who works with the Chicago team.
Four seconds. We'll go for 4 seconds. OK, fantastic. If you could just look at me, that's it. And Brett, can you just kind of get a little bit more so you're facing me a tiny bit more. That's it, yeah.
Recreating Burton's methods reveals an important secret about his pictures of people at work.
A little bit more to your left, please. That's it, yeah, perfect. Can you just kind of look a tiny bit more this way? That's it.
They may look like the snapshot of a moment in time, but Burton must have stage-managed these images, asking the archaeologists to stop what they were doing and hold a pose for the camera.
OK, hold still. Here we go.
For a few brief moments, they were acting the part of archaeologists rather than doing the job itself.
One, two, three, four. Yes! How exciting. That is so cool. Thank you very much.
The Chicago House team have this place to themselves. It was a different story for Burton and Carter in 1922. Within days of the discovery, crowds of tourists and journalists descended on the valley, eager to glimpse the pharaoh's treasures. The media scrum that surrounded the tomb every day must have come as a real shock to the system, to men more accustomed to dusty anonymity. In fact, according to Arthur Mace, one of Carter's colleagues, the archaeologist usually spends his time quietly and unobtrusively enough, half the year burrowing mole-like in the ground, and the other half writing dull papers for scientific journals. And now, suddenly, he finds himself in the full glare of limelight, with newspaper reporters lying in wait for him at every corner and snapshotters recording his every movement. The excitement of the discovery also resonated with Egyptians. This was, after all, their story.
The discovery of the tomb is international news. Europeans are quite excited by this piece of news. Egyptians are very excited by this piece of news as well, because the discovery of this almost unknown boy king, who's going to be brought back to life through archaeology, really echoes with Egyptian politicians and writers and artists at the time, with what their hope is for Egypt now that it's earned its independence, that Egypt itself is reawakening.
One of the Egyptians excited by the discovery was a young photographer from Luxor, just across the river from the Valley of the Kings. Attaya Gaddis made a living by selling his photographs to tourists. His grandson still owns the premises where Attaya worked in the 1920s.
Thank you for letting us come into this wonderful place. Yeah. How long have you been in business here?
My grandfather started in 1907, so we're talking about more than 100 years.
More than 100 years. And, of course, your grandfather was a photographer, and these are some of his cameras.
Yes, his cameras.
Attaya was apprenticed to an Italian photographer called Felix Beato. When Beato died in 1909, Attaya took over the business.
I'd love to see some of the photographs he took with these, and especially of the Tutankhamun excavation.
Yes, we have it, yes. Interior here.
Right, so this is outside the...
Outside the tomb.
The tomb, carrying on the stretcher, carrying...
And here's a small railway station up to the Nile.
Oh, so they built a special...
Yes, a very small one, yeah.
Look at all the people involved. You realise what a big operation it was, don't you? And what have we got here? More things. Oh, look, that must be a chariot wheel.
Yes.
Carter's actually in this photograph, I think, isn't he?
What?
These wonderful Edwardian gentlemen in their English suits.
And we have what's inside the tomb. This is
one of the coffins.
It's early. It's a little bit earlier.
Oh. But they're really good, aren't they? And this is what the Valley of the Kings was like then.
That's the early time of the discovery because of the guards and the tents,
so it was an area still busy.
Yes. Guards even then, of course. Wonderful photographs.
Lord Carnarvon soon tired of the media free-for-all. In January 1923, he sold exclusive rights to the story to the Times for £5,000, a small fortune in today's money. The deal alienated rival newspapers and many Egyptians who felt, understandably, that their history had been hijacked by foreigners. But it was big news for Burton.
This was a watershed moment in his career. He was no longer simply an archaeological photographer. His images made front-page news.
The spotlight fell on Carter, but Burton's pictures reveal other characters who were crucial to the work.
When we look at them now, we can see that those photographs fill a gap, an absence, that in the written record, both in the newspaper coverage of the time, the accounts that Carter wrote, and also in the archives, those sort of records and diaries, because what we see in the photographs are the Egyptians who worked at the site, who are never named in the press, and I think the photographs are all the more important for that.
Burton's images fueled a fascination for all things Egyptian. We don't know if Tutankhamun's golden funeral mask is an accurate likeness, but the iconography of treasures like this inspired designers and artists.
The mask in profile.
Meanwhile, audiences flocked to theatres to hear Carter tell the story of their discovery. And whenever Carter travelled, Burton's pictures came too.
Here we have his original glass lantern slides in this wooden chest.
Of course, he took all that with him.
Yes, this is his travelling set. And if we open the drawers, you can see there are hundreds of glass lantern slides inside here.
Well, they don't make them like that anymore, do they?
No, here we have some of Harry Burton's photographs of the road leading to the Valley of the Kings.
And are these all from Burton's original plates?
They are, yes. So these are all based upon Harry Burton's original glass plate negatives. Here we have Carter and others peering inside the golden shrines.
So they must have become stars almost, didn't they?
Yes, they were celebrities in their own right.
Oh.
We also have some hand-tinted glass lantern slides. Again, you get the sense that Carter's really trying to convey the sense of the original colours of the objects to his audiences.
So these were painted onto Burton's original black and white. Colour is amazing.
So this is one of the arms of the throne that we were looking at earlier.
And where we saw that Carter had actually made a note of what the different materials were and the different colours, so I suppose they'd have used that as a guide.
Yes, and this is obviously a much more effective way of conveying those colours to the audience.
That's terribly detailed work to paint on something that size.
It's incredible. And of course, you have to imagine these being projected in a darkened auditorium and really recreating that sense of discovery that the original excavators must have felt.
State of the art.
For the time, for sure.
And described by the man who'd actually made them. So
yes,
the world-famous Carter had been on the front page of the Times with his discovery, and there he is, and you see all this in colour. Wow.
A golden coffin on a lantern slide.
This must have caused a sensation. I mean, I remember when the Tutankhamun exhibition came round in the 1970s, queuing all day outside the British Museum and not getting in. Well, presumably this had the same impact.
Carter must have been a real celebrity by this point, and the discovery had made its way around the world. And so I think we should imagine people queuing around the block to hear Carter give his lecture.
And to see Burton's photographs, because without the photographs, the lecture wouldn't have been remotely as interesting, would it?
No, these Burton's photographs are really at the centre of Carter's lectures.
And this, I suppose, is what inspired that genre for having Egyptianised things, some of our buildings and the States as well, and they've got Egyptian pillars and heads and all the rest of it.
Yeah, these types of images must have really inspired that craze for Tutmania that ensued following the discovery.
Did they actually call it Tutmania?
They did, yes.
The instant photo-sized coloured glass lantern slides displaying the detailed images. Harry sets up his tripod in a room covered in ancient pictorial carvings. He adjusts the aperture.
While the West danced along to the tune of Tutmania, Harry Burton was continuing his work in Egypt. Capturing his images took immense skill and patience. But that was just part of the challenge. He also had to develop them, and fast. Because Carter would only move on to the next stage of excavation once he'd approved the pictures. The closest proper dark room was several miles down the valley at Carter's house, so Burton had to improvise instead.
One of the things that strikes you first about this place is just how many tombs there are. The hills are absolutely full of them. And they're so close together, there, behind me, over there, just absolutely everywhere. And of course, for Carter and his team working round here, that had unexpected benefits, because there's another tomb right over there.
This subterranean chamber is the place Burton chose for his makeshift darkroom. And Harry's persuaded the authorities to let him develop his negatives in exactly the same place. He'll be working with Sue Lezen from the Chicago House team.
Sue?
Harry.
Who's agreed to lend him some equipment.
You're welcome. So we can set you up with well-used trays.
Well-used, yes.
I find it extraordinary that the pristine glass plates we admired in Oxford weren't developed in a well-equipped darkroom like this.
And we'll get you some beakers, and we'll bring a lot of water.
That looks like it goes back to 1920.
Instead, Burton worked in a hot and dusty desert tomb, just a few metres from the excavation site, a walk he must have made hundreds of times.
OK, so I'm imagining I've got one of these exposed glass negatives in my hand, and I'm going to... And it's just there.
It's right. It's a few feet away.
God, isn't that mad? I mean, I've kind of imagined it was much further away, but that's literally just a... a kind of stone's throw, isn't it? Whoa, look at this.
That is steep. And, you know, there's not been anybody in this tomb for years and years.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Come on, let's go and have a look.
All right.
So which tomb is this one?
This is number 55.
Yeah,
this is called the Amarna Cache.
That is steep, heavens above.
Yes, it is. Imagine him carrying these things down there.
Yeah, exactly.
Take care.
Yeah, and I've got to, and you're in, and he would be in a rush too, wouldn't he? You know,
yeah, everybody's waiting for him to get that film processed.
Okay, so I'm carrying slides.
Easy to slip.
Slow down a little bit as he got down to this bit. Whoa, look, here we go.
Whoa.
This is a unique privilege for Harry and Sue. It's the first time anyone's been given permission to develop photographs here since Burton did it in the 20s.
It's a big step.
That's a hard act to follow.
Looks like there's some water that's come through these cracks.
When this tomb was surveyed in the 1990s, archaeologists discovered fragments of glass in the sand. They were the remains of negatives that must have slipped from Burton's grasp as he worked here nearly 100 years ago.
Here's the tomb itself. Boy, it looks...
I've been in smaller dark rooms, but I've never seen any with pots in it before. Yeah, look right. Down no, to quite. The right. Can you make this work, do you think?
Well, I think so. You know, all we need is a table that we set up. I mean, that's what he had to do after all.
Yeah, we can make this work.
Yeah, definitely. No, absolutely. Come on, let's go get our
all
stuff.
Right.
This is where Harry will discover if his experiments have worked. With analogue photography, you only find out in the darkroom if you've taken the picture you planned.
Three baths, dev wash, fix. This familiar smell of fix.
In Harry Burton's tomb. Well, not Harry Burton's tomb, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
His darkroom.
Yeah.
One. This water. I need that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gosh. Hey, listen. Really quiet, isn't it? Extraordinary. And to think, you know, we're right literally exactly where Burton would have developed his own negatives. It's an extraordinary idea, isn't it? All the nonsense going upstairs, you know, all the kind of thing. Carter going, come on, hurry up, you know, we need to get on, we need to start doing going to the next stage.
And pacing, and all the government officials here waiting.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I bet he was down here by himself. I bet he didn't want to know anything else up there.
That's very true. Right, we better get on with it.
Yep, let's go. I'm going to
turn the lights off. There it is. Okay, are you ready for this?
Whew. Yep, ready as we're going to be.
Please. Now, let's go in.
This is it. This is what he did.
I know. Yes, something. Yes, definitely. Oh, yes. Have you got that little wandy torch thing?
Yes.
Yeah, it's just there it is.
this down.
Oh, my God.
I might just turn this round for the camera. Like that. Perfect. So that's the right way. So this is all the foreground here.
That's
the sky up here. OK. So should we put that in the wash?
Yeah, let's...
Right, a little bit of wash.
The picture is moved into a third tray of liquid, which is lifted to ensure the image is covered.
OK, so let's have a look, shall we? Hey. Go on, give it a yank.
There you go.
Yeah.
Wow.
Ooh, look, here we go. But this is all fine. Look at that detail. So let's think about Burton. Burton would have been looking at his negatives right here under a light pretty much the same as this.
Before he said, okay, let's move to the
and
next
would have
one.
You could have taken it outside, but let's not forget this is a wet negative that is absolutely at its most susceptible to dust, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, he wouldn't have been charging out there going, look, I've got it, it's fine, carry on.
He would have kept them waiting for a lot longer.
Yeah, you know, you'd let a little moment where you'd gone, oh, that's a very beautiful thing.
Yes, yes. Congratulations.
Yeah, we've done it, haven't we?
Yes.
That's okay. That's
yes.
okay. It
yes.
really is. Great, come on.
Wow, okay.
All the dark rooms, you know, any photographer in the past, you'd love to go and look in their dark room. You know, whether it was Ansel Adams' dark room would be a thing. Cartier-Bresson's dark room in Paris, what a thing. But I don't think anything beats Harry Burton's dark room in a tomb. Right, let's put that in the box.
Now Margaret and Harry are above ground.
Carter and Burton must have done this quite often, mustn't they? Standing somewhere like
this. Side by side.
So come on, let me see it. I'm Carter, remember?
Okay. So this one's this one's wet. So this is just we've just developed this, and so this is Brett, who is the Egyptologist at Chicago House,
mm-hmm.
and he's inside the temple here, and there's a rather ghostly image. It's a negative, so it's the wrong way around.
Yeah, the wrong way around, yes. He'd be wearing white.
But, I mean, immediately... OK, so this is, I've done this quite crudely, this one.
Excuses?
I'll give you loads of excuses. First one and all that. But, you know, what it throws up is, you know, I mean, this is a fat piece of glass. Look at that. You know those things that we saw?
They were very thin, weren't they, the others?
They're tiny. They were wafer thin. You know, have a feel. I mean, that's a big chunk. You know, it still feels quite...
Oh, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've slightly underexposed this. But, I mean, he would have, you know, they'd have come out of the thing every time, sit there like you and I are now, assess it.
Is this good enough?
Is that OK?
Can I now move the object? Can we get on with our work?
And a lot of that would have been... not just, you know, here we're looking at a picture, kind of assessing it because I'm telling you that that's Brett and that's somebody else and whatever. But he would have been looking, obviously, for every, you know, in the hieroglyphics that everything showed, you know, in an archiving, you know.
Yeah, because it was important to know that particular object was in that particular place.
Absolutely, so it was a record,
wasn't it? Distinguishing feature.
Yep, exactly. Anyway, let me show you another one here. So this is one we did earlier, which is dried. Except it's got a couple of spots of water on it.
From the other one.
So this is quite fun. So this is the landscape in the temple. And this is the kind of the wall. It looks like it's taken at night, but that's dust spots because actually negative sky would be white.
What, those little spots are dust?
They are dust.
Mm.
You know, and that
Burton
which is...
Burton managed not to get the dust
on
his.
I don't understand that. I really, really don't
back
understand
down
that.
Tomorrow.
I'm so sorry. But it's just a kind of madness how kind of exquisite his things were.
Yeah, but that's pretty good.
It's all right, isn't it?
I'll give you 5 out of 10
Thank
for
you,
that
I'll
one.
Take it, I'll take it. The thing is, I've never seen one of Burton's negatives that was badly exposed, either overexposed or underexposed. I mean, it's extraordinary.
Yeah, but we may not have seen all of them. There may have been a few duds that got thrown away.
Well, and ones he probably dropped on the way back, or someone had dropped, or, I mean, you know, they're fragile things.
The technical perfection of Burton's images inspires Egyptologists today, including the team based here, who use high-tech imaging to record ancient sites.
What an incredible image. Where's this from?
This is from the tomb of Seti I in the Valley of the Kings. It is the west wall of the Hall of Beauties.
Burton took photographs in Seti I's tomb as well, didn't he?
Yes, he has taken amazing photographs. Actually, I was scanning his entire the book that had his photographs for the tomb. It helped us in planning which part we're gonna do first and which part includes what, so we decide which kind of technology we use for what. I can show you how detailed it is.
Some ignorant people have written their names. I think that's shocking.
Yes, that's the graffiti that was found there. And as you can see, it says here 1876.
But would you see that with a naked eye?
No, you can't see it. It's impossible.
Tell me how you've achieved this clarity.
Well, this image has been achieved by Lucida, a 3D scanner that we developed in Factum Arte. It's basically based out of two cameras and a laser diode. As the laser reflects and moves over the surface, the two cameras capture its motion.
It's just so real.
It is, and let me show you something even you might like more. Here, you can see a 3D of the tomb, the Hall of Beauties.
How do you do that?
It is a collage of so many photographs with a lot of overlap. It's called photogrammetry.
The Factum Arte team plan to use these 3D images to create a life-size replica of the site.
So tourists wouldn't have to actually go into the original. They could go into a replica.
Exactly, and know that they are not harming it.
Burton's aim was to produce a very clear record of what was there. He'd have been amazed by this. He'd have been envious, I should think.
I know. Looking at his pictures, I would assume if he had the technology and the means, he would have definitely done this at the time.
Burton's lens captured every stage of Carter's excavation. None was more dramatic than the gradual revelation of the pharaoh's burial chamber itself. When he was laid to rest 3,000 years ago, Tutankhamun's remains were enclosed by ornate wooden shrines, packed one inside the other, like Russian dolls. Burton's striking close-up of the sealed door was proof that the shrines had not been touched by ancient tomb raiders. Uncovering what lay within took months of painstaking labour in cramped conditions. According to Carter, they had to squeeze in and out like weasels and work in all kinds of embarrassing positions. Until, finally, the coffin could be hoisted carefully from inside the stone sarcophagus, and Carter came face to face with the pharaoh.
I've got an idea, Margaret. And what I'd like to do, there's a really beautiful picture that Burton took of Carter, where he is looking across the coffin and it's lit by this single light. I mean, it's a beautiful picture. It's got this fantastic sort of moment of where the two are looking at each other almost. It's a really, really cool picture. Just here. And I would love to move you just into the same sort of place and try and take a picture that was similar. It's going to be a long exposure, and we'll move a light into the same sort of place. You up for that?
I'll have a go.
Great. Let's give it a try.
The coffin under glass in the present.
You're leaning over a bit and hand out, because obviously he was painting it or brushing it with a brush, but we can't do that. I think it's more fun because, in fact, I see the reflection of your...
Like that?
That's it. Yes, just lovely. Come on, just check that.
They tell me that Carter was a difficult man to work with. He was single-minded and stubborn and fought many battles as the excavation unfolded.
Hold very still.
He even called the whole thing off for almost a year, after a row with the Egyptian authorities.
And when you're ready...
Though he did eventually patch things up and return to finish the job.
So I've got you. F8, 2 seconds, please. Basically the same position.
Harry Burton was a perfectionist too. But in person, he was easygoing and diplomatic.
OK, hold very still from...
A good man to have by your side when the going gets tough.
Brilliant, Margaret. Thank you so much.
Wouldn't have thought that would be so difficult.
Great.
There must have been a bond between them and great mutual respect, because Burton was one of only two members of Carter's original team who stuck with him to the end.
Burton took his last photographs for the tomb at New Year 1933, he'd seen Carter at Christmas dinner at Metropolitan House, and Carter had clearly said, "Oh, you know, we forgot to photograph the sarcophagus." So Burton and Carter go back into the tomb, and Burton takes some beautifully lit, very crisp and evocative shots of the sarcophagus with the wonderful winged goddesses at the four corners. And afterwards, Burton writes to a colleague back in New York. He writes a letter saying, Today, I finished the Tut work, and dashed glad I am. I began to think I never should finish it, and it seems too good to be true.
His greatest assignment was over, but he wasn't ready to pack away his camera. Harry Burton continued to work in Egypt for the New York Met until his death in 1940.
A narrow passenger vessel passing along a wide river at sunset. Patchy orange-brown cloud with blue skies above.
Before I stopped to look closer, I suppose I'd always taken Harry Burton for granted. Like most people intrigued by the story of Tutankhamun, I'd seen many of his photographs over the years without ever thinking about the man behind the camera. I won't make that mistake again.
Harry, I recognise these two plates. I've seen them before, but what else have you got? Show me the prints you've made.
OK, so this one is the landscape one that I took.
Oh, that's the one that I saw of the temple. It's the dust specks.
Lots of dust specks. But I think there's something quite fun about all these dust specks make it feel like an old picture, even though it was taken the day before yesterday.
Yeah, it could almost have been one of Burton's rejects.
Well, thank you, Margaret. And then we have this one, which is quite fun. So this is Brett up the ladder. And if you remember, I was quite worried that it was rather underexposed. But in fact, it works really well. You can see the hieroglyphics up here. And then here, this rather ghostly figure as well of Brett. Yeah, I mean, that could be Carter, couldn't it?
Yes, if you put a little moustache in.
Yeah, exactly.
It looks to me like a photograph from that era, from the 1920s.
That's understandable in that it was taken with a big camera, with the same kind of negative, processed in pretty much the same sort of way.
But when you think of the Burton-Carter relationship, I mean, Burton could be described as a hired hand brought in by Carter to photograph this, that, the other, as he was directed, wasn't he, in a way?
Yeah, but I think that his skill was that he was able to transcend that. And after all, Burton had had a training in Florence, photographing the old masters, so he clearly had an eye for the aesthetic. And also all the training he did here with the Americans.
And I suppose he'd been an archaeologist too, hadn't he?
Yes,
so
of course.
He had that.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and then all of these things culminating in this moment when Carter says, "And you know, I need you to come and help me reveal this event to the world and make it into something very, very special." You know, I think any good photographer, that's what they do.
Well, certainly what he did.
He did it in spades.
How have you found it working here, following the master's footsteps, if I can put it like that?
Yeah, I think that sort of one of the main things to me is being absolutely in the place. You know, my camera is now set up in probably exactly the same place as Burton's was when he took that picture or this picture, whether it's in the landscape or whether it's in the tomb itself. I've got something to show you.
Oh, the one of me?
The one of you, Margaret. Now, to me, this is the culmination of all the things that we've been doing. This whole project has been summed up by this picture, where it's Carter and Burton and you and me.
If I'd been taking this with my baby camera, I would have been on top of the railings, but you've actually incorporated them in the photograph.
When you look at Burton's picture, it has all of the paraphernalia around. You can see the props, you can see all the straps and the ropes and the things.
And the lights.
Exactly. And I was trying to get exactly the same position as Burton was in. But in the modern situation that the tomb is in now, the railings are a factor.
Yes, this is a record of what's there now, just as Burton's were a record of what was there then. But it's also, like his, a very beautiful picture.
Thank you, Margaret.
That's very good, that one.
Good.
I'm not just saying that because it's got me in it.